My name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bill.
Enjoyed the talks. They were good. I kind of wanted to give a little background. And, my first young people's meeting was in 1970, and it was in a church here in Salt Lake City. And my sobriety date is June of 72, so I had to work on it a while. And it didn't hit me like a brick. It took a while. And I was in a lot of trouble. I was a low-bottom drunk. I was 23 years old. And the average age back then in AA was 55 years old. So there was three of us under 35. And so the old guys, what I called the old folks back then, decided to put this young people's meeting, because they didn't know what to do with us. We were their kids' age, Greg kids' age. So this wonderful old man, he takes off and he goes to California. And I guess the headquarters for young people's in AA is in California. And so he got as much information as he could and brought it back. And so there was three of us in a meeting for a few years and with this old guy. And he would look at us like, what in the world? What in the world? He was completely baffled by us. He was a great old guy. And from those days, I was in a lot of trouble. I was going to go to prison, or was supposed to go to prison for 25 to life. I wasn't a really happy man. I had a lot of anger stuff going on and all kinds of stuff. Well, it ended up where they put me on life parole. And so the last thing I did is I hit a South Salt Lake cop in the mouth and broke his jaw. Well, so the South Salt Lake police back then were not happy with me at all. And so the feds got involved for, I don't want to get into that long story, but they said, what we'll do is want you to get the heck out of Utah, because the South Salt Lake police is just going to annihilate you. And we'll put you on federal parole, and you can pick your state, either New York or Texas. And I thought about New York, and I'm going, I hear all kinds, I'm from Utah, little lad from Utah. I'm thinking, I hear all these bad stories about the ghettos and stuff like that. But I hadn't heard anything about, really bad about Texas. So I decided, being real, I'm a very quick thinker, not necessarily the smartest tack, but it's quick. And so I decided real quick, we're going to go to Texas. So through some circumstances, I ended up with a little car. And I'm driving, and I got a cop car in front of me and a cop car behind me going to the border of Utah. And so, of course, I felt really excited about this new adventure. And I get down there, and I went to Dallas, is the first place I went. And I'm scared to death. I didn't know, per se, that, we're talking about shame and guilt and less than and all of that kind of stuff. I didn't realize that it just boiled up in fear, this feeling of absolute doom. And so I get to Dallas, and I go to a 24-hour club, and then they had a young people's group. And so I got a little teeny job that I got fired from, but I had a little bit of money. And they kept talking to me. I'd go to the 24-hour club because it was kind of a safe haven. Because, see, if I would have done anything wrong, it's life in prison. So, you know, a little bit's on the line here, you know, a little pucker power here is going on, you know. So I'm hanging out at 20, they had two 24-hour clubs. So I was hanging out at this one particular 24-hour club, and they kept saying, you know, there's a young people's conference down in Lake Whitney, Texas. And I said, so? You know, I'm from Utah. I mean, what's three people going to do at a lake? I mean, this is what I could see. I couldn't see anything past that. And they kept saying, you know, please, please, you really need to experience this. And so finally I gave in. They used to, I put Utah Bill, that was what they tagged me. Utah Bill. I had that tag for about 12 years. So that was pretty cool. And this one guy, Mike the Tramp, he looked like it. I mean, he was just all, you know, when people with that oil look, you know, from the hair and the face and everything, you know, this is Mike the Tramp. He's great. He was one of the greatest guys. He was a carny. Excuse me. What he would do is go around with carnivals, and he'd be the guy that, you know, put up tents and stuff. And this other guy, and his name was Sweet Raymond. And Sweet Raymond was a very interesting man. And he was going to be the chairman of this particular conference. And they said, we need a ride, so you take us. I said, okay. So we're driving along, and I'm thinking, and this doom feeling is all over me. You know, I'm thinking, Sweet Raymond, you know, and Mike the Tramp, I mean, what in the world am I getting myself into? And I was worried because I knew at least one of those guys had felonies in their past, you know. And so being on parole, I ain't supposed to be messing with any of that stuff. So all these feelings of, you know, going on inside of me, and I get down to this conference. And it was old, rundown. Where they fished, you know, and there were just old cabins, and it was all run down and all of that kind of stuff. And I drive in with these two guys, and all of a sudden they get swarmed. The whole car gets swarmed, and I'm thinking, well, this is either good news or bad news, but I'm not sure exactly which. And so all of these young people were gathered around to say hello to Sweet Raymond and to Mike the Tramp, and to introduce themselves to me. And that was really the first time that I really felt something a little different. I felt a little acceptance. And these young people, you know, they got down to it. And they had interesting meetings. They had God is the understanding meeting, which is very interesting. That was Sunday. They had sex is the understanding meeting, which, you know, young people kind of do it a lot, but they don't talk about it. And, you know what I mean? Maybe that anyway. So they had this wonderful thing. It was Ask a Basket meeting. And what you did is you had a question, you put it in this basket. And the wonderful thing about it, this started 10:30 Friday night, and there was about 300-400 young people there, and I hadn't seen that ever. It was just, I was scared to death. I'd sat in the back, absolutely sat in the back, just terrified, and I didn't know what I was terrified of. And the wonderful thing about the meeting is every question was answered by the group before they closed the meeting. And so they had all kinds of wild questions. It was really great. But my question was, how do you get over guilt? And that, it was really interesting, the feedback. And what I learned from that is, yeah, I grew up in a very very stern religion too, and no drinking, no sex, no anything. Anything Spud seemed they didn't like to do, at least what I call Spud. And I'm going to go back a little bit. My father was a paranoid schizophrenic gangster. And the first thing out of his mouth every day was, I have no idea why I ever, I have no idea why God did this to me, giving you, because you are so stupid, kid. And that was my relationship with my father until I was about 12 years old. And so I felt guilt for being alive. And I felt shame almost from day one. It was such a feeling that I understood and was with me all the time. I come to find out that I didn't know how to react other than being shamed. And so anyway, I started going, and this conference goes on every 3 months, and it's still going on after all these years. And I moved to Texas, and I was down there 3 years. I'd just been back a few weeks. And I went to the conference again, and there was 300-400 youngsters jumping around. One of the great things about young people is they get real boisterous and jumpy, yada la 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 la, rah rah, yeah yeah, and, they're chasing each other, and they don't know what they're going to catch. It's fun to watch that. We got all the dances and posing and trying, everybody's scared of each other. And, can I have this dance with you? All that stuff going on. And it was great, All of a sudden, I started to realize that there must be a different way of really thinking. And that I thought incorrectly. And I'll never forget, here comes this wonderful woman, this long-legged hippie girl, and I fell immediately in love with her. Of course, I didn't know her name or anything else, but she's the one, what I'm saying here? So I ended up overcoming all of my fear and asking her to talk with me. That's all I could do. And we talked the whole night through, and then we became what you become, anyway. But I was so frozen with all of these feelings and all of this stuff, and every time that I would do, like I got fired from the job, it automatically was my fault. Yes. Automatically, not a discussion, They escorted me out of this. It was a little hospital, and I was a software guy, computer programmer way back then. And so they escorted me out, and when I got outside, the first thing I thought about is, I need a drink. I need a drink. I screwed this hooch up. This is a great job and an interesting job, and they fired me, and it has to be my fault. It just has to be. And that's how I led my life. I could, with the little hippie girl, lady. We dated for a while, and all of a sudden I saw where she had tried to commit suicide many, many times and had scars all up and down her arm. And I dropped her like a hot potato, and I felt guilt because of it. And I couldn't figure out why I felt guilty for dropping her, because I was doing the same thing as that was creating my shame and guilt, is I was judging her. I was rejecting her. interesting, you know, interesting cycle. I was so far into it, I couldn't stop it. And that's how I was leading my life. So on the God as You Understand It meeting, at a particular time, and I think growth comes in just little squirts, as in my life, you know. Some big times, but mostly a day at a time, a little bit at a time. That's been my sobriety. And so here's God as You Understand It, and all of them get down on blankets on the floor, and they start hugging each other. And I'm going, I don't want no part of that. I mean, touchy-feely, you know. I mean, a hippie girl did real well, but I'm going, no. And I couldn't figure out why, because these people were really wonderful to me. And again, I felt that I was not good enough to be hugged. Isn't that crazy? Just crazy. But that's how I was living my life. You know, everything was negative. No matter what happened, everything was negative. You know, I moved down to Houston, Texas, and I lived with a girl for a minute, and she had two boys, and they were monsters. They were like 6 and 7 years old, and I was single. I was a single gangster. What do I do with six-year-olds? You know, I mean, I guess you feed them. I don't know. But all of a sudden, I couldn't deal with that anymore because I felt guilty that I was not able to give them what they needed. They would always come to me and say, "Give me this. Give me this. Give me this." And I go, "Give it away. Get away. Get away." And so I think what I'm trying to say is I didn't know what I was doing. And the wonderful thing about the program is, especially, I love, you know, young people's movement. And I'm so excited it's still going on. I was a bit worried that when all of the young people started to come in the 80s, that it would start to drift away. And to have, you know, Swacky Paws, UC Paws, Icky Paws, been to all of them. I spoke at those. It's such a great adventure because you can let your kind of, I still can kind of let my, I can show you who I am, which is surprising because in AA, I really don't do that too much. I mean, I do, but I don't. But here, take down all the curtains and this is what you get. You know, this is what you get. And I started the adventure in young people, and I started to question, why do I act and react like this? Because shame was a big word to me. I didn't know what it meant. I knew what ashamed meant, you know, like I would do things that I was ashamed, you know, like stupid masturbation, right? I mean, I was so ashamed, and I would do it about every day. And I was so ashamed that I just kind of wanted to die. I couldn't give it up. I just couldn't give it up at the time. And so, and the wonderful things, it's like that was mentioned, is the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because with a sponsor, in my time in the program, certain groups, the one I came into, assigned you a sponsor. So I was assigned a sponsor. We ended up together in Texas, and he led me. He didn't just, here's the book, what do you think, boy? He led me almost daily through the steps and through life. I was really a sick person. I had no idea what was going on. And we had many, many, many wonderful talks about shame and guilt. It's like I got this super job with NASA. I finally worked my little life and wasn't rejected so much anymore, and I got with NASA. And my boss, well, NASA's a wonderful place to work, but my boss come to me and he says, I'm worried because you keep putting on this thing and you got to be perfect. And what we do is when we get a project going, the first thing we do is 20 major failures. So what I want you to do is work on failure. I thought to myself, work on it? I mean, that was my life, was failure. And then I thought to myself, my heavens, if you can choose to do failure, that means you can choose to do success. How in the world do you do that? And then the old man would say, show up. Just show up, Bill, and then higher power will have a path so that you can learn a better way of doing your business. Not my business, but your business. And that's the trail that I decided to start doing. It was more and more and more of that. Today, you know, I'm just happy to be at a young people's and so many wonderful. I went through so many relationships and wacky paws and all that, icky paws. I mean, I used to be kind of good looking, and so I could get around the women, you know. And so I did. I was, you know. And so I go to the there, and I just kind of, you know, pick and choose and stuff like that. And come to find out, women had the same problems that I did. They felt, you know, less than. I felt less than. Two less thans equals quite an interesting relationship, you know. And so that's why I got 4 ex-wives. I practiced and practiced and practiced. And this fifth one is doing good. We're doing good. Yeah. Been married 3 years, a little over 3 years, and she's 23 years younger, so I still have a lot of the old thinking, but we're doing good. We're really doing good. And I think it's that process. At one time, I think people, they call relapse nowadays, slip, because they get so far into shame and guilt and all, and not talk about it, not come to somebody. Thank God I had a wonderful sponsor and we could talk about anything, you know. I remember, to go back to the masturbation, I can remember that, because he was an old man to me. He was in his 50s, right? And so I wanted to talk to him about it because it was killing me. It's absolutely killing me. I mean, it was on my mind all the time. And so he looked at me and he said, son, for you, it's going to take a long time. But what we're going to do is we're going to work at it at your pace. And what you want to do, what we want to do is skip some times that you normally do that. So what do you really want to do? Which day do you want to skip? I thought about it, and this sounds crazy, but I said Sunday. Isn't that interesting? And so that's where we started. I skipped masturbation Sunday, you know, and we went on and on and on until the day came where I could control that, and it didn't give that feeling, that deep feeling of just hatred for myself. It came a day where it became neutral. And I think that's the wonder of learning and working with shame and guilt, is what the program to me is freedom. Freedom from self. You know, not freedom from all of this stuff, but freedom from self. My wife, you know, she's gained about 50 pounds. The other day, again, she asked me, do I look fat in this dress? Now, for a man, that's a bad question. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to get it on one of, you know, this is a not good thing that's going to happen. So I looked at her and I said, you look fine, dear. And I walked out. Uh-oh. And I thought to myself, no, Bill. There, that feeling, that gut-wrenching thing was being ashamed. Shame. And I felt that. And I thought to myself, stop, just stop. I went by the front door, pray about it. I prayed about it. And what came to my mind after trying to listen about it was, do you want to have an honest relationship or do you want to have a dishonest relationship like you've had in the past? So I said to myself, I'm tired of dishonest relationships. I've had enough of that. So I went up to her and I said, dear, you know you've gained some weight. And I want to let you know that I'm willing to buy some more clothes. And that asking me the question, do you look fat in that dress? I get afraid. And so I quit being connected to you. I run and I feel this guilt. Please forgive me. And she started crying. And we went shopping, you know. And that's the message, is learn a different way. Program has always been about learning a different way. Change. They used to say, you know, no pain, no gain, and change the name of the game. And I could go on and on. I really don't want to bore you, but it's been an amazing 42 years in sobriety. And, you know, my sponsor, my first sponsor was with me 25 years of it. And back in the old days, they never told you how to live. They always told you a story. It used to drive me nuts. I wanted the answer. The old man would never give me the answer without a story. And if this has been a little boring, it's been a little story. You know, like my sponsor gave me little stories. And throughout that was always weave some kind of a message. And I can see now why they did it that way, you know. The new way is kind of a different deal, but my sponsor, I'll tell you a little story about him. I moved back to Utah, and he was in Texas, and if you don't mind, but he was dying, and so they got a hold of me and said, you know, that Dallas is dying, you need to get down here. So I went to his, and let's see, I probably had 28 years at the time. And I fly down to Dallas to Austin, Texas, was where Dallas lived, and went to the hospital. And he looked terrible. You know, people dying of cancer is not, it's pretty ugly. And so I started crying. I just started crying. We'd gone through so much together. And he looked at me and said, and got pissed off at me. And I was looking at him and I said, why are you mad? He said, see, we didn't work good enough about this shame and guilt. I said, well, what do you mean? He says, see, I'm the one who's supposed to be crying for you because you have to continue your path. And life is painful. There is no free lunch here. I'm about done. Get excited about it. I'm excited about it. I can't wait. Don't cry for me. Don't ever cry for me. This is wonderful, Bill. Come with me and go through it with me. And all of a sudden, it dawned on me, I still, in my own way, even after that length of time, would try to reverse this thing a bit and make me the guilty guy. It's nuts. It's just crazy. Because I'd still acting like I was not good enough for my sponsor. So anyway, I think that I'm kind of running out. I got a million stories. It's really wonderful. I don't think guilt, shame, and all of those things ever go away. I believe they're a wonderful tool to register something's off. Something's off. Feel guilty, feel shameful, feel ashamed, get back with a sponsor, start working the stamps, work as fast as you can. If you want the relief, you would, the, all of us will just try to get all the time. And that is the answer. I mean, I really never believed it would ever go away. And love each and every one of you. I hope you all have a wonderful time at UC Park. Get in the middle of it. Get huggy. Get, I mean, if you want to get laid. Do whatever you figure is going to help you. Because that's a wonderful thing about young people, is it's okay. It's really okay. And again, I love you and thanks.